If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We have our friend Alec Lewis of The Athletic. He covers the Royals, and he'll be in studio with us here for an hour, in an hour, and that's exciting because I like Alec, and baseball's okay. But I like Alec.
More or less than baseball.
I mean, you know.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Nothing makes you appreciate the incoming baseball season quite like a couple days without a ton of Chiefs news and some really, really, really average college basketball. All of a sudden, it's spring training weather, baby. We did get the Mitchell Schwartz news today, and also I'll mention this because he just tweeted again within the last few minutes. Successful surgery, now the recovery process starts. Thanks to everyone who reached out, messaged, etc. today. Means a lot to me, and thanks to my wife, Brooke, as always, for taking care of me. And then it's a picture of the two of them. So it sounds like Schwartz's surgery went well. Obviously, tons of implications for the Chiefs in 2021 if he is able to come back and be healthy. And at the very least, we know now he's gotten surgery and his goal is to be back. So good Chiefs news there today. But, you know, I had already asked Alec if he wanted to come on tonight, and I wasn't going to be like, hey, Alec, don't change your plans because I'm going to talk about Mitchell Schwartz for three straight hours. We'll take a Mitch Schwartz break to talk to Alec Lewis of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at Alec_Lewis. Check out all of his work up in The Athletic. We'll talk about a few of his recent pieces here tonight. But first of all, Alec, good to talk to you again. How is beautiful, scenic Surprise, Arizona?
Yeah, it's funny. I know you're going to talk about Mitchell Schwartz. I almost hung up because during the break, you had the ESPN update, and this guy was talking about Florida State Miami basketball as if it was double overtime in the national championship. He had like a snarl in his voice, and I was like, "What is going on?" Surprise is good. It's really hot here, and I have a mask tan. First person in the world to accomplish that feat. I have a sunburn on the top half of my head, not the bottom, but. No, things are good. Baseball is there's baseball things going on, so it's things are good.
You're gonna have the reverse Batman tan is what's gonna happen, which can't be flat. I mean, I don't know that it's worse than the Batman tan, but it can't be flattering.
Yeah, I was like in the hotel. I'm staying in a hotel in Phoenix, and I was downstairs last night eating dinner in the hotel restaurant, and I was like about to take my mask off. Should I do it? Should I just eat under, like, what, how do I mean, what are these people gonna think of this look? it's rough, but I'll get back to Kansas City and it'll really be rough. We'll see, we'll make it through.
How long are you in Surprise? Are you there wire to wire this year?
No, I it's funny, when I checked in the hotel for the two and a half weeks that I'm going to be here, the woman at the desk said, "Welcome home." So two and a half weeks, I'll be out here, get to see the start of games, and I'm there's a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz.
It sounds like it. Yeah, it sounds like it's absolutely, your phone's ringing off the hook right now. We're excited about this game going into this Miami college basketball game. And it's just a lot of, I think as you said so artfully earlier, baseball is happening.
Yeah, it's funny. I was out at the facility today. The Royals, they had a lot of pitchers throw live, they throw, and hitters are in the box, and it's kind of a nice way for them to get in the swing of things. And I was tweeting some videos. I had one staffer text me, like, "You're really excited for this pitching performance in February, and also you need to zoom in on your video because you don't know what you're." I was like, okay, this is going great. I'm too excited, and I can't take video. So I'm really serving a purpose.
I'm glad that here's the thing, because like you tweeted a video of Bobby Witt Jr. hitting a baseball very, very far. And that's one of the things in this life that's really getting me hyped right now, really getting me through the days. The issue is that at most I can see the top of Bobby Witt's head and then like the back of his bat. Like the way that you are set up here does keep us from seeing the people that you mention in the tweet.
Yeah, I told the person who sent me that text, I was like, okay, I'm sorry, my phone can't take out the fence that I'm looking through, and then the screen in front after the fence. Like, I'm really sorry you guys have me. Yeah, I mean, we bounce around. There's like four different fields on the backfields, and you can watch behind each one, and there's like a little barrier, as if I'm going to barge in and climb the fence. There's like a little barrier keeping us at bay. And so, yeah, the shots, I mean, like that Bobby Witt home run, it was, I'm sorry, I wish everyone could see just how smooth everything looked and where the ball actually went. But, yeah, I'm not a wizard, unfortunately.
Can you explain this tweet? I get it, but I would like for you to explain it, please. Jackson Coar's changeup would make Bugs Bunny jealous.
I'm surprised you... I don't know. I know your baseball knowledge. Bugs, people call, I guess, people, scouts, they have all these weird terms. And when a changeup is really good, they call it, he's got a Bugs Bunny changeup. Which
oh,
makes no
I didn't
sense.
Know that was a phrase. I'm actually learning this then.
Yeah, so there's like a GIF/video, and it might be in some movie or show, and I'm not that. I'm not as Bugs Bunny educated as that, but there of him throwing a pitch and it forces the hitter to swing and whiff like three times.
Yes, so I remember that clip. I didn't know that was a thing that was commonly said amongst baseball scouting.
Yep. Right. Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's a Bugs Bunny changeup. I mean, some of these verbiage. I mean, these guys. It's so funny. Sometimes these scouts talk about, yeah, he's got a good body. He's strong arms. Like, are you describing? Like, what are you describing? This is a baseball player. Yeah, Bugs Bunny changeup. Jackson Coar, obviously one of the top Royals pitching prospects, has probably the best changeup in the entire Royals system. I like Chris Bubich has a really good one, but his, and you saw it today, it's just hitters think there's a fastball, and then the baseball just seems to, like, put on a jet, a parachute, and they just are out in front of it. So that was the purpose of that goofy tweet, one of like 57 I had today.
I just wanted to know kind of like the logic that led to you putting that tweet out, because I was familiar with the video, but I didn't know that there was an actual baseball scouting backstory to that, which is very exciting, really. Really connects the dots for me. I'm going to save my Mizzou question for the end, just so you have to deal with the fact that you know that's coming. Just so you know.
Sure. Awesome.
You've written a bunch of things up in The Athletic as of late that I was going through, the ones that I had missed earlier today, and there's some big picture stuff, there's some super specific stuff. You just go read. If you're listening to this show, you're probably subscribed to The Athletic at this point. Maybe you subscribe for Chiefs coverage. Did you know you get all the baseball coverage there also? It's right there. Go read Alex baseball coverage, damn it. But my favorite, like, concept is the idea of the realist's guide to a perfect Royals season, like to what goes well in a world where you're not totally playing Calvin ball, and you've got a whole bunch of stuff that I want to dig in on a few of them individually, but what was the headspace on kind of setting that up, and then even bigger picture than that, like, what do you think a successful Royals season right now would look like with the standards that we've set, in the first days of spring training?
Yeah, someone I think in the comments said, a realist guide to being perfect. That makes sense. Good job, Alec. I was like, yep, I don't know. So what went into that was 2 years ago, Rustin Dodd had written a similar type story, and I give all the credit. I told him before, I'm like, look, this was a good idea. Is it okay if I just hijack it? And he was totally okay with that. So I was appreciative. Broadly, I mean, with the moves the Royals have made to get serious for second, I mean, they've obviously added Carlos Santana and Mike Minor to give innings and Michael Taylor to play center field and Greg Holland and Wade Davis in the bullpen and traded for Andrew Benintendi. I mean, they've made moves to make them more competitive. Last year, obviously, I mean, I believe they went 26-34. They finished the season 12-5, which tied the record, tied the league lead for the best finishing record. So with that momentum, and then continued with the momentum of the moves they made this offseason, I think there's the broad expectations that they're going to win more games. I mean, percentage more games. I you know, it's hard to just say expectation just on a to put a winning number on it. I mean, like Vegas has it at 71.5. Fangraphs has it at 78. I kind of think the likeliest is in the middle of the of that those two numbers. I think like 75 seems pretty fair. And then if people stay healthy and some of the players overperform, then you could go even higher than that. I mean, they split last year against Cleveland and against Minnesota, and so and they improved. And some and Cleveland obviously worsened, losing Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco. So there's reason to think they could take another step. But it's all about health to me. I just think that's just going to be such an important piece because lineup depth, I'm just not so sure. And then pitching, I mean, arms are really hard to predict. So that, I mean, if they stay healthy, you could conceivably believe they win 75 or more games, I would think.
And a lot of the stuff in terms of what the perfect season would look like realistically is about the guys in the system developing along the path that you would hope to see. And some of the bats bouncing back, some of the pitchers sort of staying on their current trajectory. But leaving the minor league implications and even the guys you expect to see in the majors at some point, leaving that out for the time being, whenever you look at the, you know, Brad Keller, Brady Singer, Chris Bubich progression that you're looking for, and you say that it's hard to predict arms, but do you have a feel at least for what the Royals are expecting in terms of that? Because I, like you said, that's going to be an enormous factor, obviously not just for this year, but for years to come, and into what this team's ceiling ends up being.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. People talk so often during seasons about, like, a club pitching coach, like say a pitcher isn't performing, they're like, oh, what about the pitching coach or the bullpen coach? I don't think people realize, like, in a season, these pitchers aren't developing new pitches. Mm-hmm. Like they're you're out on the field against the best hitters in the world in front of thousands of people watching. You're just trying to use whatever you feel comfortable with to be able to get guys out. So you're not just messing around with grips in a season. Yeah. So for these guys you mentioned, the Brady Singer, Chris Bubich, Brad Keller, their development, a lot of that happens in off seasons, and that's physically, like workout wise, that's with specific pitches. Like Brady Singer has continued to work really hard on his changeup, and that's delivery stuff. Chris Bubich has done a lot just to shorten his arm stroke to be able to repeat his delivery more and be more consistent, which he had been consistent but struggled at times last season. And so for those guys, yeah, there's reason. Brad Keller, just another full season. There's reason to believe with those developments that they've made in the offseason and then just experience that they take another step. I mean, for me, though, we talk about this guide, and you might had planned to ask about it, but I had Adalberto Mondesi at the very top, and it was for a reason. I mean, I think a lot of this Royal season is about health, and I think a lot of it is also going to be about Adalberto Mondesi. I mean, he's still young. He's 25, but we've been through – I mean, if you've watched the Royals over the years, just the peaks and valleys of seeing what he's capable of doing, but then what he struggles to do often, and – for this team and this lineup to click the way I think they think it ultimately could, he's just got to be more the guy he showed that he could be at the end of last season. And it's difficult, and there's a lot of factors at play and variables, but his presence and potential success is just so critical for this team. There's no overlooking that.
The thing about him that's interesting that I try to be aware of and then change my instincts in terms of baseball evaluation almost all the time, because it is such a game of sample size and such a game of these infinitely long seasons and then years of minor league development for guys that then lead into years of professional in the majors. What are they actually? So I hesitate to even put it out here this way, but I think based on your tone there and based on mentioning in the story, although I will say that having it be the first thing up, but also ranked number 10, then you say at the top of the story, but it's 10, is very confusing. It was very confusing. The thing with him there in that all of that to lead towards, I am hesitant always to say this is the time that we're really going to make big sweeping judgments about a player, and this is the year that we're finally going to make some of our final judgments and everything. But do you think that even with the fact that every baseball evaluation is years and years and years in the making, and thousands of games in some cases, certainly hundreds of games, do you think it's fair to say that this is that the clock is ticking on Mondesi, that this year is going to be the year that it's okay to just accept whatever he shows us as being the legitimate, real Adalberto Mondesi?
Before I answer it, yeah, a baseball prospect is like a mutual fund. It's
yes,
can you stocks are so volatile, but it's like at least you know I'm either losing money here, or I'm not like, but it takes.
I want everyone to be GameStop. I don't even care what happens. I want to give you my money. I want to watch it fly all over the map, and I don't need these bonds from that I got when I was 13 from my grandparents. Really appreciated it at the time, but now it's just a piece of paper. I need to go to the moon, or I want to see this thing bankrupt.
The most on-brand thing I've ever heard you say.
Yeah, saying it and hearing it out loud made me realize that I am a fully formed character at this point.
Yeah, no doubt. In terms of Adalberto Mondesi, I actually asked this question a few days ago to Mike Matheny. I asked him, how important of a year is this for Adalberto Mondesi? And he was pretty blunt in terms of, he's like, look, it doesn't help. I mean, like, what's it going to help if I sit here as a manager and say, this guy has to perform this year? Or, I mean, so the Royals aren't going to put the expectation of, like, it's either this year you prove it to us or we're just not going to believe it. But the reality is this. I mean, he's got a couple arbitration seasons left, and the Royals have just such a long history with him. And they have a prospect in Bobby Witt Jr. coming, and they have other infield prospects. And so – and they have these pitching prospects coming soon, and they want to push contention forward, that ability to contend forward. And so you just need to know sooner rather than later. And I think I do think it's a critical year, and one that really will probably tell the tale if he can stay healthy, what he is and what he can ultimately be. I think the other thing with him, and more specific to him and not the Royals, I just think, he had an off season where he got to go home. He was healthy. He got to work out. He showed up in really good shape. Man, he's always obviously the fastest dude on the field, but he showed up in really good shape. I was walking around today. It's obvious. And I just think, having been through the protocols last year and just the hectic nature of it, to know it all and to come in this season having bounced back last year, I think for him, I'm somewhat optimistic that he's going to be able to at least be more consistent. And baseball is just such a crazy, ridiculous, hard game that it's hard to get long-term sample. But I think he's shown what he's capable of, and that's being the most talented player in the ballpark on any given day.
I mean, so you say that you expect more consistency. Do you have a feel at this point where the smart money should be on where that consistency ends up? Because, listen, again, obviously, especially in baseball, more than any other major sport, like, consistency doesn't mean one hit every game, nor does it mean every single week or even every month looks exactly the same. But I also don't know if it's fair to expect that he is consistently the guy we saw hitting his ceiling for long stretches like we saw for a little bit last year.
Yeah, I think the consistency is obviously plays a great shortstop, and then I think he drives and runs in spots that you need him to drive and run, and he creates havoc on the base paths, and he gets on more than he did at the beginning of last season. I just think, I don't know if he's ever the kind of guy who's just going to stop swinging and missing at pitches. Like, if you look at historically, I was reading a chapter in Moneyball recently, and it's just walking through how, like, strike zone awareness is something that maybe it's taught, but a lot of it's just innate and eyesight. And so I don't know if he'll ever be the guy who's walking at a rate that's eye-opening, but I do think he could be the guy who just produces in times of need. I mean, he doesn't need to be hitting 280. He doesn't need to have a 350 on-base percent. Just needs to produce when need be and create havoc that makes other teams, worry and have to think about him.
You covered some of this ground already a little bit earlier, but I wanted to circle back on one of your points from this big story, looking at Andrew Benintendi and Carlos Santana having better years than they had in 2020. And even we were talking to David Leske last week, and he was looking closer at Benintendi and saying that, you know, that a lot of the conversation around Benintendi is that he's coming back from two down years, when in reality, in Leske's view, that's just not how Benintendi's 2019 actually went. Like, that he's not digging back for some sort of total career restart. It was just both of these guys had tough seasons last year in smaller sample sizes. But you also wrote in your story about Benintendi, whenever the Royals made the move, that it really is a reflection on where the Royals see their window being right now. And I know that the Santana signing does has a similar reflection there, where this is a team that's not saying, hey, this is a move for 2024. Not that, Benintendi couldn't be a part of the team in a couple of years in a very helpful way, but that these are things with the immediate term in mind. Can you expand on that some? And then also, do you think that makes sense with the current state of the Royals for them to be kind of thinking in those terms?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think most of these deals, even Mike Minor's deals, is a two-year deal. Michael Taylor is a one-year deal. So a lot of these are short-term. That's just the approach when you think about, I mean, there are so many of these prospects coming, and you want to have as much flexibility as possible. And so I think it makes a ton of sense because, look, in 2015, Picata, the projection system, projected the – I mean, I know this is ridiculous because it was an anomaly, but, I mean, Picata projected the Royals to win 73 games, I believe, in 2015. Hmm. And guess what? They caught lightning in a bottle. They believed in themselves. They won games. They made it to the playoffs, and then they just went off. And so I think – as crazy as it is, like, baseball is just such a – it's just so much is up to random chance and just getting hot at the right time, that if you bring in these guys who have winning experience and supplement the core with that type of element, then maybe you do stay healthy and catch lightning in a bottle and push toward the playoffs. And then once you get in, who knows? I mean, it's obviously a pipe dream, but it's not one that they haven't – that Royals fans haven't seen here locally. And so – I do think it makes a lot of sense as you're trying to bridge the gap to more sustainability, because it's like, how do we bring, especially with baseball now and how it connects to the young generation, I think the feel, and I haven't been told this, but it makes so much sense. The feel is, if we can bring people in and be competitive the next 2 years as we start to hit our stride with these top prospects that we have, then it can create something pretty, pretty special. I think that's their feel. And so to me, it makes clear sense, without a doubt.
And the one thing you mentioned there is all the shorter deals means you still have all that flexibility in the future. And this is me now just running this by you, and tell me if you think this is accurate. But the thing that terrifies me in terms of any, like, sport roster building is whenever you have kind of the stopgap guys, the veterans that you think, well, you know, they're going to be a professional athlete and they're going to be fine here, but it ends up stunting the growth when those reps could be going to someone younger and that maybe that could help their development along. with the way the Royals are currently constructed, it doesn't feel like that's doomed to happen at any point. Where, I mean, and I can think about even like the outfield the last couple of years and even trying to figure out, is Bubba Starling ever going to be a professional baseball player? But like, that's always my concern. My concern is that a safer veteran is going to get in the way of somebody with more upside, and maybe that a team has some delusions of being a contender sooner than they should. I say all that saying again that it doesn't seem to me like that's going to be an issue that the 2021 Royals have. Do you think that's right, or is there something that I'm missing within that?
No, I think you're right. And a lot of it, let's think about the pitching side, okay? So a lot of these young arms who a lot of fans probably think, like, is Daniel Lynch, he's got to be ready. Why are we signing Mike Minor? Why are we signing Irvin Santana? Why are we giving Jacob Junis and Danny Duffy rotation spots? Well, here's the deal. These guys didn't pitch full seasons in 2020, and their arms aren't built up to pitch full seasons. So, like, those guys, if you want them in crunch time, can't even pitch the whole season, or unless you want to just blow their elbows out.
Yeah.
So the Royals, your point is 100% right, and they're not – those pitchers, to be able to stay healthy, need some of these veterans to shoulder some of the innings. That's just the nature of it. On the hitting side, I mean, like people will say, like Bobby – I mean, look, Bobby Witt is 20 years old. I mean, they rushed it. They pushed it with that Alberto Mondesi. Some could argue whether that was a – I mean, has hurt him through the years. So I think for them, they feel like when those guys are ready, when these guys are ready, like Kyle Isbell is an outfielder. I mean, Kyle has only played one season in the minors. So – it's not as if these guys are taking holding spots, and that's why, to your exact point, that's why I think there's even that much more comfort with doing it this way this next year and next 2 years.
You had a great piece on Josh Staumont that you can't tell the story in a 30-second, minute-long radio answer, but I want to mention it so people can go check it out. But also, I am just you talk about guys that are alluring and that you just want to see doing things on your screen as much and as often as possible. Josh Staumont just has that. He's the guy that it seems like every time he's on the mound, you get a series of tweets about something that some pitch that he's thrown that has made everybody go, wait a second, he's an alien. He's got an extra or maybe one less tendon in his elbow because that thing shouldn't have happened. I'm just interested in what the story building process was like for you there, and then also if you share the Josh Staumont fascination, and then also what's fair to expect from him this year.
Yeah, the story building, I mean, as the Chiefs, I mean, it seemed like people cared about the Chiefs in Kansas City this past year. I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but it seemed like people really cared about
them. We mentioned them some for sure. Lot. We went position by position through the Royals' entire farm system most days this fall and winter, but we did mention the Chiefs occasionally.
Good. I'll catch you after we get off. I'll ask you where you think Gabriel Cancel is going to slot in the minor league. But
yeah, that's perfect. And then if you could also just explain who the hell Sammy Watkins is, I would love that because I am so confused.
But Josh Staumont, I mean, the story building process was cool. I called pretty much every coach he's ever worked for and had time to do that because Nate and Seth and our whole athletic team did such a good job on that side, Rustin. So for me, it was great. I had time to kind of just, I don't know, work on a story in the way I think you, in a perfect world, you get to work on every story. And, I mean, he's such a, like, talking to him is, you'll ask him a question and he'll go on and he'll be like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. This is how I think through it. And I'm like, don't apologize because this is the greatest answer I've ever been given by any professional athlete of all time. But I do 100%. I share that intrigue. When he gets on the mound, I mean, he throws 102 miles per hour, and it looks like, it just looks so easy. And it's fascinating to know kind of how that's come to be. And what's fair to expect this year? It's a good question. I think the Royals will probably be flexible with the bullpen, so I don't think they will have some distinct closer if the game is in crunch time in the sixth inning. You could see Josh Staumont. But I think just him continue to gain experience and and throw strikes. I mean, as long as he throws it anywhere near the plate, he's going to be successful because he throws it faster than GameStop headed to the moon. So, it should be interesting to watch. You're 100% right. When he's on the mound, for Royals and people who don't even love baseball, I think it's appointment viewing that people would enjoy.
Yeah,
for sure.
It can just be hard to find that. Like, you're right, appointment viewing for people who don't like the guys who show up on the screen where I have a reason to be like, hey, Renee, watch this, and maybe she'll go, oh, that seemed different. I don't know if that'll happen for Josh Domon or not, but it occasionally happens with the Chiefs. Football does that sometimes. Baseball can do that, you know, whenever steroids are being used. Barry Bonds.
Really, I've thought about this a lot too recently as the Chiefs are playing football and people are talking about them. But baseball's inability to connect with the youth is part of why I love like Pitching Ninja on Twitter.
Yeah.
It just makes the game fun and cool. And the game can be fun and cool and it's really interesting. But I think so often it's there are parts of it that make it seem very not fun and very not cool. I don't know. I hopefully for somebody that story was like, wow, this is awesome and that's cool. Maybe I'll watch them because that's I don't know. It's the more of that for young people, the better for the game. And I'm not Mr. Get Steward of the game, but I mean, I'm reading a chapter in Moneyball. I should probably be passionate about it.
It's fun, but the story is also fun. I also just realized, because I read this story on my computer at home, I just scrolled to the bottom again now of the story on a different computer, and the emoji technology that The Athletic apparently has that I did not know it had until this story, I've got a different tomato emoji and a different orange emoji on my browser here than I did on my computer at home. Technology is incredible.
I ended a feature with an emoji. That was for me, stepping outside. I mean, we talk about stepping outside of our comfort zones. I mean, ending a story that I wrote with an emoji. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, I couldn't believe they let that go.
Yeah,
great.
It's really powerful. All right, so now tell me how Mizzou makes you feel, and then we'll let you go.
Oh, boy. How Mizzou makes me feel.
Mizzou basketball. Mizzou basketball. I don't know if you saw this, Alec, but they lost last night.
Here's my situation with Mizzou basketball. I could talk about last night's game, and that would be great, and people would people may enjoy it. I could talk about this season as a whole. But I just would – I mean, the issue I have is you got this one season where this team isn't very good, but some people think they're good. And then if you look at what's coming these next few years, it's Josh – could get a scholarship, I think, and play for Mizzou basketball.
I think I have at least 1 year of eligibility left.
I honestly think you could have played last night, but I really would like to see you. I really would like to. It would be more enjoyable to watch if you were on the court. I know that. To be true, like the direction of the program is what's like honestly very concerning.
Yeah.
They're not recruiting, and so if it's like. If the answer to that is, well, they're doing it the right way, then I'm going to sit here and be like, well, okay, I guess if you want to pay $3 million a year for someone to do it the right way, but your team to suck, then, like, I'd love to hear the explanation. But, like, I'm rambling now because it's just that's the part. It's like you have this 1 year where fans can't even get into the team because the team isn't good. Sorry. But the team's just not that good. And it's like, oh, this is our year. We're going to make the tournament and lose in the first round to William & Mary. And then next year, you're going to be watching Josh and Rudy and Beard.
Rudy at least has the height. Like, at least Rudy could go up.
Right. I wouldn't mention him for no reason. Come on. So
he's got a nice jumper.
No, so it's just brutal. I don't know. Missouri just – it'd be cool if they're relevant, but they just aren't, and it's unfortunate.
About an hour and maybe 10 minutes ago on these same airwaves, Sterling Holmes was also advocating for cheating. That's both of you, independently, both of you ended up in the place where you're saying, bleep doing it the right way. Get a bag of money, get a McDonald's bag, fill it with cash, and bring me a good athlete, damn it. Like, that's where you're at right now.
don't clip this, what I'm about to say, but I've been watching Alabama play Arkansas, and Alabama's like top 10. And, you know, I just am so proud of that program for being able to provide such a valuable education that attracts some of the best athletes in the world to play basketball there for a program that is just so storied. That's just to think about that, I just hope Mizzou gets there one day. That's my greatest hope in the world, really.
All right, so now Beards, don't mark that. Don't mark this. Don't save all of that for future reference. Alec was very clear with his instructions. Last thing, Alec, is I don't really have anything question-wise from your story about the first full workout, but I do want to note the fact that your story does end with you recounting the noise of an airplane flying overhead and a maintenance vehicle making some other noises besides you. So now even your stories are being plagued by random motor noises. So even though this segment wasn't, that story was, and that filled my heart with joy.
I'm trying to think of, like, what subconscious thing in my life deals with the like hums of motors or something. I don't know where I am going. I have no idea. But I thought about heading out of my hotel and trying to pick up a moped or something. I don't know.
If we get you on from surprise itself at some point, if you just wander around outside, an old man in a golf cart will buzz by you. That I can promise. So next time.
So am I going to have to? Oh, you're going to get me on from surprise at 9 p.m.? We're going to have to
the
workout at night?
Yeah, no, okay. No, just hang out. Just wait for us there. When do workouts usually wrap up?
4 p.m.
Yeah, what, you know, 4 or 5 hours, whatever. You can read Moneyball. Read Moneyball in the sun and even out your mass suntan.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I might just want to stay there in the dark so I don't have to show my face and how it looks right now.
No, you can hold Moneyball over the top half of your face, but take your mask off and then just do
that.
I'm
going to read
Moneyball.
I'm going to read this book when we get off the phone. Don't you doubt it.
How many times have you read that book?
Zero.
Oh, wow. This is your first time through.
Correct.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, there's a movie.
I've seen the movie.
Did you know that there's a movie?
That is amazing, Rudy. I've seen the movie many times. But I was like, you know what? I do this writing thing. I should probably know, like, the ins and outs of this with the job that I have.
It's an interesting book. I enjoy it.
It's just that it's not
a good movie.
Yeah. Very good movie. If you haven't, the Arm, Jeff Passan's book, also.
Love it.
Truly amazing.
Is that a movie yet? Yeah.
No, not yet.
All right, well, holler at me whenever it's a movie. Holler at me whenever Jeff Passan gets Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill involved in the project. Maybe
what
I'll
if
be
it's
interested.
Just, what if it's like just Jonah Hill, but no Brad Pitt?
Or
vice versa. Just Brad Pitt, but no Jonah Hill.
If it's Jonah Hill playing Jeff Passan, I'm in.
I like it.
You know, you guys start talking about movies, and I'm just like, I'm doing the Simpson backing into the head.
I mean, that's Josh too.
Yeah, this is right. This is a pretty safe space for having not seen movies. Like, I do have this job, and I've not seen or read Moneyball. I'm not like proud of it. It just never happened for some reason. I don't know. I'll get the audiobook or something.
We need to make that happen. We really. You'll read about some scouts, find out some Bugs Bunny.
Maybe I'll just watch Looney Tunes on mute and listen to Moneyball. Maybe that's my plan for this next weekend.
I think Moneyball might have also been an off-Broadway like type of musical situation. Not Broadway, but off-Broadway.
A musical? You think they made it
I'm pretty sure they made it
Hold on, Alec. We'll let you go as soon as we find out if Moneyball's been made into a musical
or not. What does that mean, off-Broadway?
So, like you have Broadway and you have off-Broadway. Off-Broadway are like the lesser musicals that are, you know, it's not Hamilton, you know, It's Franklin.
That's a relatively famous phrase. It's no Bugs Bunny changeup. But it's pretty.
That defines my life right now. Yeah. I know about a Bugs Bunny changeup, but don't know off Broadway. My parents, I hope they're not listening. God help me.
Listen, I gotta tell you, man, if they were listening at the beginning of the segment, that's awesome. If they're listening 41 minutes later, they need to get a hobby.
Oof.
It's been a long segment, and I don't I don't know. I feel like I learned more about Bugs Bunny than I did about baseball. Is it a musical or not, Rudy?
I don't think so.
All right, perfect. No, that's good. That's how this segment should end. Thank you, Alec. It's been wonderful to chat with you again.
Right, and close.
And that's the end of the segment, and scene. And Alec's back on hold, and now action, and we're on Broadway. We're off Broadway. Follow Alec on Twitter, at Alec_Lewis. Read his work in The Athletic at TheAthletic.com. Is it a musical or not, Rudy?
It was getting buzz back in 2011, but I don't believe it's ever buzz.
It should be starring Bugs Bunny. They should make it.
I don't believe it ever got a musical.
Looney Tunes adaptation.
I mean, it looks like a high school may have made it, may have done a musical based off of it.
Off Broadway.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
If you thought that segment was bad, wait for the next one.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Alec Lewis. You really should be reading his work up at The Athletic. I know I say this literally all the time, but I always mean it. From Chiefs to Royals and all the college, the various college teams and everything, there is so much great sports coverage and so many great people covering all these teams in Kansas City. The Athletic is, the bang for your buck there is crazy. From the day-to-day Royals stuff from Alec and the day-to-day Chiefs stuff from Nate Taylor, plus the extra stuff where Seth is doing some analysis. Alec mentioned Rustin Dodd even stepping back in to do some more Chiefs stuff around the Super Bowl. It's just, I am biased in favor of all of those people, but it's just a great deal and a series of absolutely excellent different forms of coverage. There actually are a handful of things that we didn't get to with Alec on the Royals front that I figured we'd have some time to talk about. I forgot to ask him to pick a nickname for Andrew Benintendi. I might have to text him and ask him to pick between Benny Biceps, Andrew Super Nintendi, and Andrew Chicken Tendies.
This is where you find out if Alec is listening to the show.
Oh, if he just listen.
Because he does. He does listen to the show. You will get random text messages from him throughout the show addressing topics that we have talked about on days in which we are not having him on. He is a listener.
If he listens for the remaining 15 minutes of this hour after being on for 40 minutes, that's above and beyond.
I know it's not
above
true,
and beyond
but in
insanity.
My heart, I'm going to believe that Alec is actually like Chaotic Warrior. Or One Gunner Down.
Oh, one of the Twitch.
Like, I know it's not true, but oh boy, would that be great.
You think Alec is secretly he's a tier one. Is tier one or tier three the highest?
Tier three is the highest, yeah. Who's the man who subscribed? I want to think that Alec is bad news I tried. He subscribed today and has given us money.
I listen.
He did.
If Alec is paying for
bad news, I tried is the one who said being a Mizzou fan is like calling your old friend just to say hello, but your friend is darkness.
We should have been giving Alec money for what we did to him tonight, not the other way around.
He can have we'll give him $5 for that subscription.
Alec, send us an invoice and we'll get you reimbursed. The couple of things that I do think are interesting, listen, the whole, like, the Royals organization for the next decade is honestly going to be determined by how the pitching all ends up. Like, and it also just the sheer amount of pitching. They won't all be major leaguers, and they won't even all need to be good for the Royals, but we've seen this throughout baseball in the last several years. One of the reasons you get all these, we've talked about this also, one of the reasons you just keep drafting pitchers is that the ones that hit, excellent. If you get a couple of aces, you're in amazing shape. Mm-hmm. Then you can get some rotational pieces. You can fill out your bullpen, but also you can trade arms for bats. That's a trade that you want to be on you want to have the pitching originally, and you can find some bats in someone else's minor league system that are going to get it done for you.
It's just also significantly easier just to even find this guy, to find the Whit Merrifields of the world, right?
Absolutely.
The guys who are just like overlooked. It happens. Every team's kind of got that pitcher who was a bit like that, but like it's usually more of a bullpen guy than a rotation guy. There are some examples. Dallas Keuchel was overlooked. The Astros loved him because of his spin rate. That's what they saw. Spin rate doesn't, a guy's not sliding out. If a guy has a crazy spin rate everybody in baseball knows about him.
They know
like
who
that
is,
guy right. is not sliding under the radar anymore.
Right. But with that being acknowledged, that's going to be the thing that largely determines where the Royals are headed for the next several years. Mm-hmm. A couple of those guys that we are having very focused conversations about this year, like Mondesi. We didn't even talk about Hunter Dozier with Alec, but like the guys that are here right now that we have to figure out what we being being the Royals or us as covering them and everything. Figuring out if they're going to be a part of the future and what they're going to prove themselves to be, that'll keep you interested on a day-to-day basis, even whenever, maybe Danny Duffy's pitching and how much longer he's going to be around. You can enjoy that. But in reality, you're really watching to see what's Mondesi going to be over the course of a larger sample size and hopefully he stays healthy and gets to prove where he's going to end up. We need to take another break because I don't know if you heard this, but we talk to Alec for 40 minutes. So we'll take a break. Hope you forgive us, and we'll wrap up the show whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
This show hasn't been very good so far tonight, has it?
I disagree.
This show is not. I'm not going to even be defensive about it. This show's just not been very good tonight.
I disagree.
The first show I did was good.
I disagree.
And I think
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
There's a lot of things I haven't gotten to yet. We'll use this last segment as a bit of a catch-all. Although the Ringer's video game GOAT bracket has also gotten down to their Sweet 16, so we could probably get through that relatively quickly. If you guys want to return to that. Also, here's my question while I try to get the link up. Did you guys know that apparently it's supposed to refrigerate raisins? I was eating some raisins today. I'm putting them on some cereal this morning.
I think I've just only ever had raisins in the cabinet.
I Googled it after the fact, and it seems like unless you live in like a really hot climate, it's fine to just leave them in the cabinet. But the thing on the package today said refrigerate after opening, and I was very surprised to see that.
I guess that makes sense. I've just never seen it.
I'm going to blaze through the Ringer video game Sweet 16. Mario versus Tails. Mario seems to be winning that one in a blowout. No fight there. 6-seed Bowser versus 2-seed Donkey Kong. I think I'd vote for Bowser here. I think Bowser's underseeded.
That's fine.
Rudy's opinion scorched my eyebrows. No, that's fine. We'll move on to the next one.
Yeah, I like Donkey Kong.
1-4 Sonic versus Pac-Man. This one's interesting because Pac-Man's most iconic form is like 5 pixels. Sonic is a little more of like a better... Sonic's a better character, right?
Yeah. I mean, Pac-Man is not really... There were some games that made Pac-Man like a character, but he's not really a character.
There's also a lot of Nintendo properties on this, like Yoshi versus Ryu from Street Fighter. It's got to be Yoshi, right?
Yeah.
Link versus Arthur Morgan from Red Dead Redemption 2.
That's sad.
It's Link.
That's sad.
It's a lot of Nintendo.
Easily. Yeah, but
so Lara Croft versus Pikachu.
It's a lot of Nintendo.
It's a lot of Nintendo.
But here's the thing, man. Nintendo has the best, has historically the best characters.
I'm not disagreeing. Yeah. Master Chief versus Samus is kind of interesting.
I'm gonna go with Samus.
Armored, assassin or soldier, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Assassin.
I went to soldier. I don't know.
I think I would rock Samus.
That's one way you could have ended. Say it. Tony Hawk versus Mega Man is offensive to me. I don't really care
about
Mega Man.
They're both not very good, honestly. Yeah.
I don't really care about Mega Man, but Tony Hawk is the last remaining actual human being in this list.
Mega Man, though, the game on the Game Boy Advance was fire. The RPG game, it was great. You would like it.
Thanks to Alec Lewis and Sterling Holmes for joining us. We'll do it again tomorrow, 7 to 10, and we'll talk about, I don't know, whatever. Leskie will be on tomorrow. We'll do a little more Royals talk. I've got some other big stories. I want to talk about Alex Smith, what he said, a bunch of interesting stuff, but we'll do all of that tomorrow. Tonight's show is over. Until next time.
Bye, Mom.
You are listening to Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.